Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and thank you so much for joining us tonight on Our Voice Radio. This is Miss Chanel, and I am your host this evening for the Book Experience. We are speaking with Stacy Covington Reed this evening. She is author of You Love, very suspenseful, very heartfelt, very, very, it had me angry, actually. So, but we are speaking with Stacy. And Stacy, when you join in the show, please press one so that I know it is you on the air.
Hello, hello. How are you this evening?
I'm well, Stacy. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Great. Oh, my God.
Thank you so much for having me on tonight.
I'm glad you're returning. This was much different from the other book we've read.
Yes, it was. I took a turn to the left a little bit.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I tell you that I really wanted to shoot the book. I was so upset. I was irritated. I was so irritated with, oh, my God, Otis. And,
yes.
Oh, where in the world? How do you go from previous writing to this?
Love, and, well, not all love, but drama and friendship and, yeah, some love.
Yeah,
and then just taking
love.
This turn.
well,
you know now,
right? Huh? Well, sadly, we all, you know, I've actually experienced some of the issues that, you know, you wrote about. Sadly, we either know someone or have experienced that. So, where did you? I can't even imagine. All the moves.
What made me take that turn?
Right. Right. What was it?
You know, here's the thing. Well, you know, even with my previous books, I love to write about stuff that people can relate to. You know, yeah, you can relate to the friendship and betrayal. Yeah, you can relate to being, you know, emotionally hurt by love. But there are so many people that are hurt every day, almost every second of every day,
yeah.
You know, by physical abuse, domestic violence. And, you know, I sat and I thought about that, and I was like, am I going to write this story? And the thing is that so many people, even some of my oldest friends, never realized was that I myself was a victim of domestic violence. For a short time, but I was fortunate to be able to get out of that situation. But, you know, just sitting and thinking about it and thinking about the multitude of women that haven't been able to get out so easily and how their lives are affected, and it just, you know, I was just compelled to write story.
Right. And unfortunately, you know, some are able to escape, but some actually escape by dying, you know. So
exactly.
It is a very tragic situation, but, you know, reading Hate the Way He Loves Me, oh, my God. I love Zoe's strength in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Then it seems like Zoe and Pam flip flop.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, that's something that I was most proud about with the book, because I've seen it happen in real life situations where you have this family member and everyone depends on them, and you know, they're strong, they're the rock. And you have to think, who's there for them?
Right.
Who's there for them? And, you know, the rock, even a rock can be worn down over time. But I love how Pam found her strength, and she was able to, you know, rise up and become that leader for the family, at, you know, so to speak. Well, not even necessarily the leader, but that savior in a way, so to speak.
Yes. Yes, she was. She did, because I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. A lot of people didn't see that coming.
No, I excuse me.
You
want to
know something funny?
What?
Didn't see that coming initially. I really didn't. Even I didn't see that coming until I was just sitting down writing it, and I'm like, that's it right there.
You know, now that is always so interesting and funny to me, because a lot of the authors say they didn't see, you know, you're writing the book and yet you don't see a certain scene.
Oh, yeah.
How is that?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I know for me, when I sit down and when I'm writing, I have an idea of where I want the story to go. I have my basic premise for the story, but as it goes on, you learn to just lend yourself to it, and you just let go. And honestly, I'm sitting there typing, and I had a totally different ending in mind for the book, but as I was writing, I don't even know where it came from. I guess I just lend myself to the writing process. And it just, the story just goes in the direction that it wants. Sometimes you love it. Sometimes you're pleasantly surprised. And honestly, sometimes you go back and you read it and you're like, what in the world what was this? You know? But I didn't even have that in mind until I just got so caught up in it. And that's just the direction it took.
Well, I'm glad. I just finished it about 2 hours ago.
Oh,
and I was like,
so your emotion is fresh.
Right, because I found myself irritated as I don't know what. I wanted to put my hands around Andy myself, because if you're just joining in and tuning in, we're speaking with Stacey Covington Lee again, author of, you may remember Stacey, from Knife in My Back 2, and Bitter Taste. So the Bitter Taste of Love?
Bitter Taste of Love, yeah.
So, of course, you know, she's back, and she is back with a little different style of writing. But it is one that, you know, you'll go through some emotions, and it's real life, though. It is something that, you know, many women either secretly hold that information in, or, you know someone who is going through it. And so, but you never know how to help them. I love Desi, and I was so mad because I was like, why didn't he just shoot them?
I know, don't you love, but I did. I love Desi. He's probably my second favorite character of the whole book.
Now, who's your favorite?
Pam.
Why?
She was so broken. And, you know, in the Black community, when you talk about going to therapy, you know, for Black folk, we go to church. We work it out in church. We don't go to therapy. Pam recognized that she needed that help. She recognized that she needed help on a professional level, and she shared, you know, with the man she loved, she shared up front the issues with him. You know what I mean?
To me, that
showed courage. It showed bravery. It showed strength, because you just don't see that strength in her initially. but you just see it grow over time. And for me, she just triumphed in the end.
Yes, she did. I didn't think that she would, but she was very observant. I didn't think, because actually I said, oh, because I recognized the OCD component that she was, that she was developing. And so I really thought that she was hallucinating. I said, oh, poor thing. She has this man who, even in telling the Bobby her path, which, you know, a lot of men, you tell them your path and they use it against you.
Yes.
So
they either
difficult.
Run for the heels. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. They either use it, they either run for the heels or they use it as a weapon.
Right. And Alvin was, I loved him. I loved him because everything he knew about Pam, he decided that he was going to make sure that she knew this is not how a man treats a woman.
Exactly.
Even as far as I loved him. Now, I absolutely love Alvin.
Yes.
He was my favorite character because he showed what a real man that really loved his woman, what he was willing to do. He was willing to stand there with her through it all and help her in whatever capacity he could.
Mm-hmm.
And and because a lot of men will not go to counseling.
Oh, no.
Counseling is taboo. You can't, but a lot of black people, as you said, and I thought about that, because I was like, oh, wow, she's trying to encourage, because even Zoe was like, nah, I don't need counseling,
She even tried to tell Zoe, and Zoe wouldn't budge.
Yes, and I that's unfortunately, in the black community, we think counseling is a sign of weakness, sign that you're crazy, or there's some type of mental deficiency there. But it's not all about having, it's not about being insane or living close on the edge. It is about someone on the outside that's not, whether it's a relationship issue, whether it's domestic violence issues, whether it's whatever abuse issues or just in life in general. And, black people, we do not seek out that help. We try to other methods.
Exactly. We don't see the value in it. People just don't. They don't recognize that mental health is just as important, if not more so, than your physical health. And people wouldn't hesitate to go to a medical physician, but they balk at the idea of going to a mental health specialist when, your mind, that is your greatest asset. You would want to protect it and get help for it, I would think, before anything else.
Right, certainly. And one of my favorite scene, Stacey, was when Alvin called for an emergency session. That right there just showed much he loved Pam.
Mm-hmm.
That
he was completely
invested
in her.
Yes, and you do not find that. That was just, oh my gosh, I love his character. I think he's my favorite because what woman doesn't want a man to love you and all the flaws? And she had some. She put them on the table from Jump Street. She had them. And, I just love his love for Pam. Loved it. And then I also love the fact that, and I don't mean to give too much of the book away, if you who have not read, but I love the fact that he told her, I don't want a roommate.
Oh, didn't you love that? didn't you? I love that. Look, I'm saying it like I didn't write it, but again, I absolutely love that because that's something that you women today you don't hear. They don't hear that.
No, no.
They don't hear that.
Like role reversal. Like she wanted. She's like, no, we don't need to keep paper. But he wanted to validate their relationship, and you know, and just show her, you know, everything that a man does for a woman, and just show that higher level of love by, you know, making it right with their relationship.
Yes, and it's like he knew her worth more than she did.
But because she was so broken by, you know, her past, you know, he absolutely did know her worth. You know, I don't think she knew the full, you know, even though she was breaking out of her shell, even though she, you know, she was doing more, she still did not know her full value and, you know, everything that she could bring to the table. I think she was still hesitant because, of course, they're always looking over their shoulder. You know, so that she was operating clearly out of fear, but Alvin helped her break down some of that she knew out there.
Exactly. But I think that fear became her strength in the end. I believe that strength, I mean that fear, it became her strength. It gave her, between Alvin and that fear, it gave her the courage, the strength to do what she felt she needed to do.
Yes, and I was nervous about her decision. Oh, my gosh. So you don't know how nervous she was when that scene played out. She endured all.
Were you holding your breath like, oh, God?
Yes, I really was because I'm like, oh, my God, you have got to be kidding me. I'm going into this interview upset because this is so unfair. You are kidding me. But that whole, you know, the last few pages of Hate the Way He Loved Me, it had me up and down because I was anxious and, you know, like, oh, my God. So it shot. I mean, I wasn't expecting it. I wasn't expecting, you know, because I couldn't. I was trying to figure out, now, where is she going with this Otis situation? Is he, you know, cause really, in my head, I'm really thinking, okay, Pam is so terrified. She has conjured up these images because no one else has seen. So she is so terrified.
And no one else believed her because of how fear-driven she was, because of her paranoia, you know.
Right. So I was beginning to think that, oh, she is really losing it. And then I was thinking she's going to lose her man because she's actually losing her mind now for real. So when he did the emergency therapy situation and, you know, the counselor spoke, I said, oh, okay, well, you know, the counselor believes it. You know, it's not. So maybe something is going on but no one else observed these.
Right. You know, I think people get so comfortable in their new situation, you know, believing that I can't be touched, you know, especially with Zoe, there was so much going on in the other areas of her life with Ramon and all of that, you know, for her to, I think, catch that and pay attention to that one aspect of Pam's situation was just, I think it was just too much for her. It would have put far too much on her plate, and she would have just fallen to pieces.
But we do, you know, because she, you know, felt that. Because I think that Pam all along recognized the Ramon. I think she recognized from jump, you know, and I think the mother did too. I think she recognized it too, but she kind of, going on with the daughter and thinking, okay, she, you know, she knows him until she was about to move, then they really thought, no, this isn't right. But I think we get, you know, when we see things, especially if you've observed, some of you, you say to yourself, I will never allow that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That will not happen to me. If it happens to me, I'm walking out. I'm leaving. I will try to kill him. I'm fighting back. But we don't.
No, so many times we talk a good game to ourselves. When it comes down to actually taking action and doing things to protect ourselves, we just fall apart. We never hold fast to our word and do what we need to do so many times, at the most crucial times, it seems. And that's what happened with Zoe. She overlooked so much. She made excuses, something that, you know, people would think she'd never do.
Right.
And
so
why is that we do that, Stacey?
Why do you think we as women say, you know, I'm not going to accept that. I don't accept that. But then we turn around and we accept the very thing that we swore that we would not.
I don't know. I think we get these images in our heads. We get these notions in our heads of what we want it to be. Of, you know, and as women, we want to fix it. We want to fix him. And maybe if I love him this way, or if I do this for him, or if I'm this kind of woman for him, then he'll be what I need him to be for me. It'll make him better, and the situation will get better. But we fail to realize we cannot change people. We cannot fix people. If a person is broken, it is up to that person to seek help and fix themselves. There is nothing that you, I, or any other woman can do to fix some broken man, because Ramon was dealing with issues from his own past. And so until he dealt with that and until he sought help for himself, there was never going to be anything Zoe could do to make him right. There would never be anything any woman could do to make a man right if he didn't see what was wrong with himself, and if he didn't seek help for whatever his issues were. And we need to get out of that, I'm going to fix him, I'm going to change him mentality, because it's never going to work.
So how does a man know that he's broken? What if he does not know? What if he does not understand that he is broken?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. And I wish I knew the answer, because all that I can imagine, I do. All I can imagine is whether you're a man or a woman, every relationship you enter into fails. The same issues you had in that past relationship you're having now, they're following you. That's a sign. That's a clue that something is wrong. Something that you're doing is not right. You need to make changes in your life. You know, because if you keep doing the same thing, you're going to keep getting the same result. So I think it's a matter of people recognizing the patterns in their lives and, you know, trying to fix them, trying to make it right.
So we as women, how do we, if we have a man that we know is broken, not to the degree of Ramon's brokenness, because that's just way too much and over the top. That's just, And you know what? And I can't say it's way too much over the top because I've been in that position. Not to the point where he's threatening my family, but, you know, threatening to kill me. I've had guns to my head. And I still, I didn't leave when that gun was put to my head. I still remained there. So even though, and yes, clearly there were some issues there. So how do we, if we choose to stay, how does a woman, if she chooses to stay, whether she stays out of fear or stays, because a lot of people, a lot of women, if you're born and raised in the church especially, you know, it's, they'll death do us part. Oh, that's the man. Yada, yada, yada. How, what do you say to that one?
With that, I think that, unfortunately, a lot of women, they don't know their value. And I think that for a lot of people, you tend to gravitate towards what you know. So if you've experienced this kind of treatment in the past, if you grew up watching your mother be treated this way, watching your mother, you know, be abused, it's what you know. And it's sad to say that on some level, people are comfortable with what they know. People fear the unknown. So if that's all a woman has ever known is that abusive relationship, whether it was watching her mother go through it, you know, watching another relative go through it, dealing with it. You know, you've got high school girls now that are getting punched around and saying, oh, it's okay, he was just upset. Oh, that was my fault. I did that. I shouldn't have. You know, because they don't value themselves and they don't know anything different. And for that, I wish I had the short answer. You know, but it's a matter of a lot of times of other people being in and telling them, you know, this is not the way to live. This is not love. This is not what love looks like. And offering them a helping hand.
Right. But, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, you know, let's take Candy. And if you're just joining us, thank you for tuning in. We are speaking with Stacey Covington Lee, and we're talking about Hate the Way He Loves Me, her new book, which you should read. It is a good read. It will make you angry. And, you know, you'll laugh at some things and cry, but in the end, you'll enjoy it. So it's a twist, a new, not something if you've read the other books, The Knife in My Back, Knife in My Back 2, and Bitter Taste of Love. You will say, oh, Stacey wrote this? So that's what I said. This is what Stacey's doing now.
Like,
oh, that
is
But I enjoy it because it's reality. It is reality. Because you touched on a few things. And one of the other things that, you know, because they each, the mother and the daughters, they each dealt with things in their own way. And it is interesting because the mother dealt with it.
You know, you hear people talk about they're an emotional eater. You know, the mother was definitely an emotional eater. She dealt with all her pain, all her worries, all her concerns. And I'm saying it in a comical way, but it's really not funny. But she dealt with it all with a pot roast and some macaroni and cheese. You know, the woman would.
And some fried chicken.
And some fried chicken. So, yeah, she. You know, but there are so many people that do that. There are so many people that do that. They deal with their emotions, you know, by eating them, you know. They eat their emotions, and food is their comfort. And, you know, it's unfortunately it's to their detriment, you know, because it is a most unhealthy manner, but it's just how some people are able to cope. And that was how Martha was able to cope. I know Martha can burn.
Oh, my goodness. out of Sunday. She is cooking like this. Wow.
Oh, no, I couldn't.
I understand it because I get upset. Cookies, bread, yes, that's me. So I understand it. And no, it's not healthy. But it is. That is the way I used to. I need cookies, chocolate chip cookies, Oreos. I need junk. That's what I want. I ain't going to the kitchen and cook like that.
No, and I'm like you. I don't want to sit down to a plate of fried chicken or a plate of pasta. You know, if you give me a cinnamon roll or some Smart Food popcorn, you know, I'm a happy woman. Is it good for me? Well, of course not. But it gives me a temporary reprieve from my emotional distress.
Exactly. Now, Stacey, what is it that you think, because, you know, even a man of Ramon's caliber, any man actually takes some patience to, because you are reeling that woman in,
mm-hmm.
and then you get her, and then you break her down. But it takes so much patience to reel them in.
He's a predator. He's a predator. And that's what they do. Look at the predators, the ones that prey on our children. Look at how they take the time to gain the children's trust. And, you know, a lot of times, most of the time, it's someone that the children know. It's a friend of the family. And they reel them in. They slowly reel them in. And he was no different. He was a predator. And it's like once they get you, they pounce. All they want is to tear you apart.
And that was a quick tearing apart.
Yes, because I
was really shocked. And then, the scene, okay, so this is what this is my first really big bout of anger. When she apologized, because I think, and then I had to go back and reread it, because she didn't hit him first, but
no,
he honestly felt that she hit him first.
Mm-hmm.
To where you mm-hmm. actually had me believing that she hit him first.
But in his mind, you know, how dare she hit me at all?
True.
You know, how dare she hit me at all? So for him, it was almost as like she initiated it all. Everything that happened to her, you know, everything he did to her, she initiated it, because in his mind, how dare she have the nerve to raise a hand to him, even if it's in defense.
Yes, but I was convinced that she hit him first. So that's how we felt that scene, because I really had to go back and look at, no, I don't think he did it. I don't remember it that way. So you had me also convinced that she struck first, but he backhanded her.
Mm-hmm.
Is why she punched him. You know,
yes.
And I was so thankful. Harvey in that group was the only male that he turned out to be a real friend. He turned out, because,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, Mitch, and I just thought how disgusting. And I couldn't
stand
Andy.
Was that not the most disgusting thing in the world?
Yes.
And you know what kills me is how he took something that she meant to be so private and so special for just the two of them and completely used it against her.
Right. Sadly, some men do that. And, you know, and it's not just with things like that. It's with information that you give them, which is why, you know, a lot of trust issues, you know, which is, again, I'll go back to Alvin. That is why I love Alvin so much, because he never used anything against Pam. He never said, you know, well, you did this, you know. So he was catered to her, and he treated her very delicately, but he treated her as a woman.
Yes.
And he, as a woman that he loved, and knowing all that he knew. So, and I think it takes a special man, and it says a lot about a man and his character when you know so much about a woman and her past, and that you could just love her through that, to where she doesn't even think about that, that she lets down her barriers and she wants to experience and do a lot of things with you that she really was not comfortable with, or that she didn't want to do, or that she never thought about doing. Because, again, Pam was going towards the OCD.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I,
what you mean?
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's important to me, though, in every book that I write, that for every male that has issues and that is not the man that any woman would really want, it's important for me to build a male character who is just the epitome of what a real man is, what a man should be. I have to have that talent.
Yes, you did that, because I absolutely, Alvin is by far my favorite character. And then Debbie.
Okay.
I love Debbie, but I absolutely love Alvin. But yes, I love Debbie now. Debbie had her back.
Exactly.
No matter what. He had her back, and he was not going to, which is what a brother should do. And that's what they were. They were like brother and sister. And so,
exactly.
But he always had her back from childhood.
Mm-hmm. He's always been that protector.
Right. And so, and I love that too, because the fact that even though, and I'll here's another little
spoiler alert
I'll say for you guys. Right. Even though Desi is gay, he still was a protector, you know, and a lot of people think, you know, just like he, you know, called him the derogatory name. He protected his sister.
Yeah. He protected himself by getting out of that environment, and
right.
He protected his sister. You know, yes, he was gay, and call him what you want, but Desi was a man in the sense that he was a man, period, but he was
right.
A man protecting his family, and I love that about him.
Yes, like I said, he's my second, because, yes, he wasn't playing about his family, and it was the backstory to Desi.
Well, Desi grew up, they grew up when they were younger. They're from the Washington, D.C. area. And Desi, you know, Desi knew he was gay from early on, elementary school. And it seems that everyone in the neighborhood knew it. And for that, they tormented him, you know. And so as children, though it was she was his comfort. You know, she was his comfort to let him know that it was okay, you're fine just like you are, I love you, you know. And so she was that for him growing up, and, you know, he was the protector. Whenever she needed an escape and somewhere to be safe, she went to Desi. But as Desi got older, recognizing that he wanted to live his life, you know, without being tormented, and he wanted to be in an area where there were more like-minded people and people with more of an open mind and a more accepting attitude. That is when, you know, he decided to make his move. That's when he decided to make his move to the Atlanta area.
Now, why is it that Otis's siblings continue to provide, now that was irritating me, provide their whereabouts?
The other relatives?
Yes.
Yes, I mean, think about it. You know, you know, that's, I don't know, I guess, but I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen. You know that this person is abusive to his family. You know that he is a detriment to the survival of his family. Yet, you will turn around. I have seen people turn, I've seen women do it. I've seen men do it. They will turn around and give their sibling whatever information they need, with, and they'll preface it with, now, man, I know you're going to go and you're going to do right this time, right? I know you're going to do right this time. You're not going to go do anything crazy. And that sibling, oh, no, I'm straight now. I'm straight now. You know, I'm going to do right. I want to just apologize and, you know, let them know I'm sorry for everything I did. All right. And there they go. And they give them the information, knowing in their heart of hearts that everything he just said was a lie.
So why did they keep telling the aunt and giving? That's what I didn't understand either. Why keep supplying your aunt, even though that is your aunt, she continues to supply this information to your father, and you're trying
I
to
think
stay
they,
away from them.
I think that they just wanted to try and hold on to some connection, you know, to some aspects of their family. They just wanted to hold on somehow to that connection. I don't necessarily understand it, but, yeah, they just wanted to hold on to that connection.
If you are listening online.
And I think
online,
it was mostly.
Go ahead.
Hmm?
You think it was.
Oh, and I was just going to. I think it was mostly Pam, you know, because she
right.
was looking for that secure ground then, you know, just trying to hold on to whatever she could.
If you're listening online or you have just tuned in to the book experience, we are speaking with Stacey Covington Lee. She's author of Hate the Way He Loves Me. We're discussing the characters and some of the situations without trying to give too much of the book away if you have not read it, because I will spoil some things. So I'm sorry, but you can still read. It's still very good. You'll come to an understanding of, oh, that's what she was talking about. But if you've read, this is Stacey's second time with us, so she is not new to the book experience, but this is a new way, a different form of writing, a different storyline than
right.
what we're perhaps used or accustomed to from Stacey. But it's still a story that one can relate to, either from personal experience, unfortunately, or from someone that, you know, you may know. And it's still a good story. It's a good story. It's, you know, I was angry. I laughed. So I enjoyed the drinking and the meeting and, you know, the stuff. I'll drink to that. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. The camaraderie of it all.
Right, right. Now, Candy, does Candy turn her life around? Does she finally, I know, and I don't really want to say that part, because then that'll tell somewhat of the ending, but does Candy
right, no.
get totally out of the grass? Does she make it?
You know, I would tell you, spoiler alert, because I have had so much feedback wanting a part two, even though I wrote it as a standalone book. People are like, hello,
can we get a part two? What's part two? And I've decided to do, and I've begun to write a part two. So I could tell you, but then, you know, where would the incentive be to read part two?
Okay, so let me ask you this. Does April, Brother, and Zoe get together? Because that's what I was waiting on.
Well, you know, people have been asking me to write a part two. And I could tell you, but then there would be no incentive for you to read part two. Don't you like that answer? It's just so, you know.
That's real cute, Stacey, real cute. I'm going to read it anyway. So are you working on it now? And what are you working on? Are you currently working on part two?
I am. Right now I am working simultaneously on part two of Hate the Way He Loves Me. And I'm also working on another novel, Awake to Death, which I'm really excited about that as well. Awake to Death, have you? This is going to sound crazy, but if people are really, really, really honest, they'll be able to answer, yeah, I have said that in jest or just in frustration, and I didn't really mean it. Have you ever, in frustration or in jest, you know, just someone was getting on your nerves, and you're like, oh, you make me sick. I wish you just drop dead and leave me alone. Well, you're last, see? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know what? This woman who's been happily married for 23 years to her teenage love, and they've got daughters now that are, you know, grown and in college and starting careers, but the wife feels like she has missed out on something, and there's this friend that she meets, and this female friend is like, girl, you're still young. You what? You're not doing this, and you've never done that. You haven't lived. Oh, my gosh, you've been tied down your whole life. And she feeds this to our main character and gets this in her head, and all of a sudden, nothing that her poor husband can do is good enough for her anymore. Nothing is good enough. Nothing is making her happy. And in just such frustration, you know, she's asking now for a new car, although she just got one, but she's trying to keep up with this new friend of hers. And he's like, babe, you just got a car or whatever. I don't know what I can do to make you happy anymore. And she tells him, you can drop dead. That would make me happy.
Wow.
Guess what? He drops dead. And then the story really begins. Yeah, so that's I'm loving this story.
So when can we expect
because
that?
Because you can expect that late summer, early fall.
Now, how do you write simultaneously and not twist up or mix the characters up?
I don't know. I just, you know, I keep my notes, and, you know, I'll make sure and to keep myself on track, because I honestly have put one character from one book, put their name in the other book by mistake. The scene was all correct, but the name was wrong. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. No, you don't belong there. You know, but I just opened my notes, you know, my little very sparse notes that I've written down for the story that I'm going to be typing on, and keep it right there by my computer so that I have that as a reference just to kind of keep me on, you know, on track as far as the names. You know, I know the storyline, getting that mixed up, that never happened. It, you know, because when you are in the midst of that one story, it really does have all of your concentration. You know, but, you know, a name will pop out of nowhere, you know, but it's not an issue. It's just, like I say, I'll keep the list of names there, whatnot, just for reference, but it's not hard to do, actually.
So how do you name your characters?
Well, sometimes if some of the characters are based off of people that I may know, I'll, you know, do a loose translation of their name. Otherwise, depending on the kind of character, I'm wanting them to be. I mean, I've actually just Googled because I knew I wanted Ramon, you know, I knew that his character was going to be, you know, Hispanic male. And so I just will Google Hispanic male names and pick out one that I still think his name suits him well. No offense to anybody named Ramon, that's a real sweetheart, but I think it fits him real well.
Right, it did. It really did.
You know? And Zoe, I mean, you know, I don't know. It's like I'll think of the characteristics of the person and try and pick a name that I think will, you know, just kind of embrace, that kind of fit with their character. And, you know, initially Zoe to me, Zoe, I don't know why, has always been a strong, free name to me, someone who's free-willed and strong and, you know, not tied down by whatever, you know, constraints someone might want to put on them, you know.
Right.
And that's where her name initially came from.
Well, I like the characters. I like the way things ended up. I was nervous. But you tied it all in. So I'm excited to read the second installment.
Mm-hmm.
Of where you're going with that, because I did have a question, like, okay, I'm waiting, because it seems like she and April's brother, there were some sparks there.
Mm-hmm. Someone else
mentioned that, too.
I had someone else to feel that as well. We're going to see if Zoe is feeling it.
Well, I think she did, even though, because, you know what, even though you're going through your issues with your, you know, whatever issues, and she was going through some serious issues with Ramon, even though she was going through those issues, you're still a female. So when you see, and from the way, you know, the description and, you know, their their comment, he was a nice-looking man, so...
Mm-hmm.
Even though you know, you don't have blinders on, you still see.
I was going to say, yeah, you're going through, but your eyesight still works just fine.
Right. So, you know, there's, even though you're not thinking, I don't want a relationship because this right there, because that emotional abuse and all of that, that takes hold on you. So I can see where one says, no, I just stay off it. But I think he was kind of feeling her, because he said, boy, a family of beautiful women.
Then what
so
now?
He said a family of beautiful women.
Oh, yeah.
So I think he was feeling her, too. So, and then, you know, they walked in the house, and he has put new things, like,
mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, stop eating.
Wish somebody would hand something like that to me on a platter. The house, I mean. Let me clarify. I mean the house.
Right. So you did a good job. You did a good job with my mind play, because I had everything. I could see everything going on. So I'm excited about this new installment. I want it interesting to see how you take it, and, you know, if we learn about Candy and April. So will April have more of a role?
She will. She will. I want to see... In this part two, we're going to see Candy step up, and we're going to see April step up, prominent role in part two. So we'll learn more about their backgrounds. We'll learn more about, you know, where are they now? What are they doing? You know, how is their life playing out? You know, in addition to all the other ones that we love, you know, our Desi and Zoe and Pam and Alvin, you know. But, yes, they're going to step up and take more of a prominent role as well.
Now, when is this one coming out? Are they both
this
books coming out at the same time?
Well, this one, part two, will actually be out after Awake to Death. So hopefully, I'm keeping fingers crossed because, you know, you have to get on, you know, the roster, the publisher kind of lines up all the books that are coming out, you know, in a certain order. And so fingers are crossed. And what we're hoping is that it will be out, you know, in time for Christmas.
That long? look at me. That long? I didn't know you were. I thought the story was it was done. But now that I know.
Well, here's the thing. I could finish it next month. But because of, you know, other books that are dropping, it still just depends on where I get placed
right.
on the roster. Mm-hmm.
So hopefully
we can make it a little sooner than later.
Yes, I hope so too, because now that I know it's one topic, I need to know how it all ends and what is going on. You know, these people
and
are my
all
friends
of your
now.
Questions will be answered. They're your friends now.
Yes.
I love hearing that. You know, I got to tell you, this has been such a great interview because usually people have read the book like way in advance of the interview, or they've started and they haven't finished. But you coming off of just reading it, and it's like your emotions about it are high. I love that.
Well, you know, because I
you.
I am. I've read everything you've written. So, and I am a fan. I enjoy what you. So when you tweeted and said, "Hey, Chanel, I've written a new book." Yes. Absolutely. Come back for it.
Thank you
yes,
so much. I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate good writing. So, again, we have this conversation has been with Stacey Covington Lee. She is the author of Hate the Way He Loves You. And read it. Read it in Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
Yes. My Twitter is, what is my Twitter? At Covington Lee. Yes. Everything is my name. So, yes, please read it and tweet me at Covington Lee. People can find me on Instagram at S. Covington Lee and Facebook, Stacey Covington Lee. They can visit my website for excerpts from all of my books at stacycovingtonlee.com.
And can you tell them where else they can purchase your books?
My books are also available if you want signed copies. You can purchase off my website. You can also purchase on Amazon. They're available on Amazon for electronic download as well as paperback, as well as BarnesandNoble.com, Kobo.com, Google Play, iTunes. They're everywhere.
Oh, wow. You're readily available. So thank
readily
you
available.
So much. Right. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to the book experience where we have spoken about Read It. Tweet me. Let me know what you thought about the book and the interview as well as come on Facebook and let me know what you thought. Stacey, as always, it has been a pleasure, and I so look forward to reading your two new books this year. At the end
Thank
of
you
the
so
and
much.
And hopefully you'll come back on and discuss those too.
Absolutely. It's a date. It's a date.
Well, until Thursday. Actually, we're going to skip Thursday. We're not going to have a Thursday show. We're actually having a special Friday edition for Poetry Month in April. So if you know poets or if you're a poet, and you want to spit some poetry, we're going to have a special show on Friday at 7 for anyone who wants to read their poetry. So please make sure you tune in Friday night at 7. Stacey, again, I thank you so much. God bless you. Take care. And until next time, I'll see you on Twitter.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night.